trial, tribulation, but I know God. Satan wanna put me in a bow tie.
All right, welcome back to the Early Evening Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show. My guest is Robert Miranda of Flack. And you know, Robert, we were talking before we went to the break, man. We were talking about the fact that, you know, all of these issues with the water and what people are dealing with and the impact that this has and the fact that, you know, it's now... the nation is aware of it. The government is aware of it. There's money that's been put into these that's going to be coming into cities. Nowhere near enough to address these issues. But this is long term. You talked about, I don't know, how many different pipes in the city of Milwaukee? How many households? 80,000 or something like that?
There are currently 120,000 homes that the city classifies as having lead paint, soil, dust issues. And then there are currently about 67,000 homes that have lead lateral lead pipes that are connected. I asked the city a couple of weeks ago, do we have data that shows how many homes that have both? And they didn't have that data. They finally put that data together, which was about a month ago. They sent me that data, and that data now shows that in the city of Milwaukee, there are about 65,600 homes that have both issues: lead paint, soil and dust, and lead pipes.
Let me ask you this, man. You and a national organization has created cans of water that you have been delivering to pregnant women.
Right.
Let's talk about that, man.
We threw
that's how serious you guys are about this.
Oh yeah. We developed through our partner or our coalition, Get the Lead Out. They're called Get the Lead Out Coalition. And the Get the Lead Out Coalition, which I'm a steering committee member of, developed what they call the Pregnant People's Program. In other words, those individuals who are expecting a baby.
PPP.
Yeah, PPP. Yeah, those individuals who are expecting a baby who have lead laterals supplying the water in their home will contact us and will pay no money for a month's supply of water to be delivered to them by our volunteers. And so...
Across the nation?
Well, here in Milwaukee. Specifically, okay. In Milwaukee. But they're looking at replicating what we're doing across the nation. And so one of the charity organizations that started this with us was a charity group called Can Water for Kids. And Can Water for Kids is a charity group that specifically focuses on providing fresh, clean water in areas that are devastated by water issues. And so they worked with us for a few months to supply us with water so that we could take cases and cases of water to people who have entered into the program. And so one of the things that we're working on right now is to make it more sustainable is to work with a couple of churches where we're going to eventually put an industrial-type filtration system in where we can then get the water filtered and everything and apply fresh, clean water to those homes that have lead pipes so that women who are expectant don't have to ingest and take the risk of drinking water while their fetus is developing.
So where are we at now, Robert? We've laid out from the inception of when you started this battle to where we are today. Where are we on this, and what are your thoughts? In the near future?
Well, we're right now I've been in a data gathering mode with the city, because what I want to do is I want to show the city that this matter of lead and water, they have to take more seriously. This idea that the city is saying we're going to remove 1,100 pipes a year is absurd. We can't take 60 years to remove these pipes. If Newark can remove 23,000 pipes in 2 years, what makes Newark better than Milwaukee that they could do that? We can remove these pipes in less than 10 years if we had the kind of leadership creativity that Newark leaders displayed when they removed their 23,000 pipes in 2 years. So we went ahead, and I went ahead and started gathering some data, because what I wanted to show was that Milwaukee does have a lead and water issue that it needs to recognize. And one of the things I did was I asked them for environmental health risk assessment reports. And I showed you a copy of a graph that basically makes my argument. And that argument is, shows in that graph that after 20 years, it shows water main breaks throughout the city. And there are two areas, 2 years that I was specifically focused in. One was around 2003. The other one was around 2014, where we had a record number of water mains break, especially in 2004, which really broke the record of water main breaks. And I correlated that with the rise in lead blood poisoning. And it correlates nicely. It shows in that year when the record of water main breaks happened, we saw a significant rise in reports of lead blood poisoning. And then the year subsequent to that, you could see that the water main breaks were reducing. The lead and blood poisoning was reducing. So there's a correlation. There's a link. So right now I'm waiting to see some of the reports to see what assessors were saying, because my whole push right now is to challenge the city and its narrative on lead, paint, soil, and dust being the primary cause, and challenge them to prove that and show the public the data that supports that, and to also establish a task force that will deal with how we can remedy this problem, working with community, working with homeowners, working with city officials to get this issue resolved.
So we're sitting in Waukesha right now. Is it safe to say that the city of Waukesha has lead laterals?
Oh, yeah, it does. It
oh,
does.
So, and, yeah. And are experiencing the exact same
they're
thing?
They're experiencing, yeah.
It just may not be aware of it.
Exactly. They should call their common council or their alderman and ask the, I mean, if there's anybody who's interested in the water in Waukesha, call your alderperson and ask them, how many lead pipes are in Waukesha? Are we dealing with this issue? And if they're not, y'all need to go ahead and challenge them.
So there was a time when the city of Milwaukee several years ago was giving out filters.
Right.
Are they still doing that?
Yes. But very,
do the filters make a difference?
Filters depending on the type. Filters do play a role. However, if they're not maintained, it's worthless. If you're not changing the filters every 3 to 4 months and leaving it like that, it's worthless. If you don't know how to use filters, and one of the things is people don't understand. When you're using filters, you cannot filter hot water with those filters. Hot water messes up the charcoal and stuff in the filter, and it reduces it to nothing. So you cannot run hot water, and a lot of people don't understand that, and that's why filters, I'm a little hesitant about when they say we're going to be issuing filters. I prefer that the filters be used in a way that would filter the water as it's coming to the pipe or to the tap, rather than using the filter when the water runs from the tap.
So the filter and the hot water, it's generally used for showering.
Right.
Is how that an issue?
Showering,
because it's not entering your body.
Showering is not a big issue unless you're in water that has lead in it, and you're soaking in it for about 6 to 8 hours.
Okay.
You know, because then your skin turns into kind of like
So what about the filter on my refrigerator?
The filter on your refrigerator, I would highly suggest you get that changed or looked at very closely, because
will it filter out the lead?
Depending if it's a NSF NC53 or 42, you got to check to see if that filter says that. If it doesn't say that, it's not filtering out the lead.
Okay, so if I've got that NSF, which is what I have on my refrigerator, mm-hmm. that does filter the lead.
Right. It's got to be NSF 53 or 43.
So what about the filters that they put on the tap itself?
The filter that they put on the tap itself has to also have that. Now, you have filters that can attach itself to the tap. That's fine. There are all different types of filters.
Right.
But the key is to look at the filter box, read the model, and make sure that it's NSF 53 or 42, NSF ANSI/ANSI, A-N-S-I, 53-42.
You know, Robert, so if there are people, and I know there are people who are listening, who need information, man. They need information about all this. What's the process?
You could always go to your water department website, and they always have information about lead and lead poisoning and lead in water, Milwaukee Water Works. Or you could go to our website, get the Lead Out Coalition website. Google Get the Lead Out Coalition, and you will see a myriad of information, resources, links for you to look into. Or you could go ahead and Google Lead and Water EPA. EPA has a lot of information.
You know, I'm gonna carry you over for one more segment if it's all right with you. Phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. If you have a question or comment for Robert Miranda of Flat, now would be the time. I see you. Will come to you on the other side. 844-967-2789 is the phone number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. To the Earl Ingram Show, as always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. My guest is Robert Miranda, and let's go to the phone lines. And Dave, hey Dave, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Yes, Earl.
What do you think of the information, Dave?
Well, I'm interested in this. I've always been interested in my water. I'm kind of a health nut. So for decades, I've been drinking purified water, and I've settled on a tabletop or a countertop water distiller. Mm. The water is always super pure. I think it's the purest.
You can measure it. My wife has one of those.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and it's amazing when the thing is done. Okay, so it's about the size of a large coffee pot. You fill the tank with water. It takes about 5.5 hours to produce a gallon, or a little more than a gallon. And you look in the bottom of this tank when it's done, and there's this brown sludge that I clean out every time. And it's just, you know, our water that we're getting from our water systems is really good, but it's not perfect, mm-hmm. as we know, right? If you look at the reports from the city systems, they say how many parts per million of mercury is in there and of lead. And as you know, there's no safe level of lead.
Right.
So there's still some lead coming in the water as it is.
Right.
But the distiller takes it out, and it's they're really cheap. And the one I'm using right now, like I said, I've been using these for decades. They've improved them over the years. It's over 8 years old, and it's going strong. And at the time, I paid $200 for it.
Mm.
So I don't know. You know, all these programs giving bottled water to susceptible populations, pregnant women, and that. I don't know what that costs, but
You're saying it would be cheaper. You're saying it'd probably be cheaper to do
that. It might be. I mean, and just think of all the plastic that's generated and the plastic leaching into the water and this bottled water that people are drinking and the many pounds of plastic from all the plastic bottles. This thing, this distiller comes with a glass pitcher. And the water comes, you know, it distills out, it drips into the pitcher. And we're running this thing all the time. And, you know, the electricity use, because it's working on heat, in our cold climate, I think
well, you
the
know, Dave,
is free.
You're 8 years. That's the old technology. They got some stuff out now that will... you will blow your mind how quickly they do it. I know that the thing that my wife uses, when you look at the bottom of it, you can see the small leaded particles, microscopic kind of. So yeah, at the root of all these things, Dave, is the fact that we've got to be more cognizant of this, because nobody's, it's not like it's on the evening news. It's on the morning news. It's not something that you're talking about, right?
What I would like to see is the city or the state make a mass purchase of these things, you know, until these people can get their pipes changed. You know, they can get a deep discount and just distribute these to everyone who needs one.
Hey, Dave, thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate it. Robert, you before we get out of here, you said one of the things that you wanted to and you were looking at is to maybe get the city to somehow give tax credits or to do something, because this is an expensive undertaking to move those. We're not exaggerating. We're not trying to mislead people. This is
going to be expensive.
Yeah.
Yes. But, you know, the investment here is...
In life
and in the long term. You know,
yeah.
The cost for us as taxpayers later, you know, a much more healthier community. Brings down the cost of health care, a much more healthier community, reduces crime levels in the community. A much more healthier community reduces the need for substantial amounts of money to put in specialty programs at schools.
So Robert, let's do this. Let's bring Al on. Al, quickly. Yes, sir. You say what?
Well, I've been drinking boiled water since we started with the crystal pyridium outbreak years ago, and over a quarter of a million people in Milwaukee got sick. I was in a restaurant in Detroit a week ago when I buried my sister, and I ordered the boiled water with ice, and the guy took the water and put it on the stove and boiled it, put it in a cup and put ice in it until it got cool, and then he served it to me. But I'm just, you know, I disconnected the ice maker from my refrigerators, and I bought countertop ice machines, and I boil water, let it cool, and then I put it in the ice machine. So the water that I'm, you know, even with the ice, it's been at least cleansed better than it is coming out of the tap.
I would express and I would stress caution when you're boiling water, because boiling water that has lead in it does not remove the lead.
I know.
When you say boiling water, I tend to remind people, make sure if you're going to be boiling water, make sure that water doesn't have lead in it, because it lead becomes even more toxic when you start boiling it.
I agree.
Hey, Al, thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate it. Robert, I want to thank you, man. What do you want to say in closing?
I want to say this is some nice digs.
Oh, you talking about WAUK here in Waukesha?
That's right.
Yeah.
This is nice. You guys are moving on up. Man.
Well, we're going to be
the east side.
We're going to be bringing you back, man, again and again and again. But thank you. Thank you for the battle. Keep up the good work and hard work, and we'll be in touch.
All right, brother.
All right, that's my good friend Robert Miranda. Thank everybody. We still got some time. We got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back. All right, man.
All right, bro.
Watch the motion. Watch them close enough to let the host up make your ocean. Roller coaster ride that bitch. Soon the latest eyes go switch. You know Johnny got that itch. How many more crush? Got a tip on my cup. Play by the play. Bash. Stop. Wait. Break. Fast.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, Jane Madner just stole my thunder. She was talking about the Boogaloo Boys and the Proud Boys and all of those groups that, you know, are anti-government. And so, you know, CJ always calls and he says, what about Black Lives Matter? You know, and those people, those Black Lives Matter people in Antifa. And so he made me want to go through and look up who and what the Boogaloo Boys are, the Proud Boys, and the Oath Keepers. And so I'm getting ready to give you the definition of who those groups are. And it's amazing who's in those groups and the danger that these groups, these American citizens provide. Don't provide, but the danger that they are to the society. The Boogaloo Boys. How many of you knew that the Boogaloo Movement is a decentralized ideological network that believes in a coming second United States Civil War? Referred to as the Boogaloo, and espouses anti-government and anti-law enforcement rhetoric. And CJ calls and says, Mandela Barnes says defund the police. Listen to this, CJ. And espouses anti-government and anti-law enforcement rhetoric. While some Boogaloo adherents promote white supremacist beliefs, others have provided security for and demonstrated alongside racial justice protesters, making the movement difficult to classify along with traditional political lines. During 2020, Boogaloo adherents increasingly attended protests and riots, and they often sought to capitalize on high tensions to incite violence and chaos. The movement's decentralized adherence proficiency in evading online content, moderation efforts, and their ability to use social media to recruit new followers mean that the Boogaloo movement will likely continue to pose a threat, particularly to law enforcement and government targets. That's the Boogaloo Boys. Now, the Proud Boys ideology. The Proud Boys are a right-wing extremist group with a violent agenda. They are primarily misogynistic, Islamophobic, transphobic, and anti-immigration. Some members espouse white supremacist and anti-Semitic ideologies and or engage with white supremacist groups. Members, there are 119 active Proud Boys chapters across 46 states recognized by the National Proud Boys Organization. Notable characteristics. Members frequently wear black and yellow Fred Perry polo shirts, other black and yellow clothing, and tactical vests. Global footprint. Proud Boys have international chapters in Canada, Britain, Ireland, Germany, Norway, Sweden, Australia, and the Philippines. Membership controlled by local chapter leadership and subject to initiation rituals. Tactics. Public rallies and protests, members have been known to engage in violent tactics. Several members have been convicted of violent crimes. Recent activity, Proud Boy members accounted for one of the highest number of extremist arrests in relation to the January 6th insurrection. In 2021, Proud Boys latch on to anti-mask and anti-vaccine activism, showing up at school board meetings as well as related protests and rallies. And last but not least, the vaunted Oath Keepers. So what is an Oath Keeper? The Oath Keepers, founded in 2009 by Stuart Rhodes, is a loosely organized conspiracy theory feud group that recruits current and former military, police, and first responders. It asks its members to vow to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Promotes the belief that the federal government's out to strip citizens of their civil liberties and paints its followers as defenders against tyranny. More than 24 people associated with the Oath Keepers, including Rhodes, have been charged in connection with the January 6th attack. Rhodes and 4 other Oath Keeper members or associates are being tried this month on seditious conspiracy charges for what prosecutors have described as a weeks-long plot to keep the President Donald Trump in power. Rhodes and other Oath Keepers say that they are innocent and that there was no plan to attack the Capitol. I say to you, you know, all of you who believe in you know, what CJ constantly talks about, with Black Lives Matter. Well, Earl, you ain't around Black Lives Matter. Hey, Earl, what about Antifa? No one can point to definitions as harmful as towards a nation as the ones I just read to you about Antifa, about the Oath Keepers, the Proud Boys, and the Boogaloo Boys. Those are, without question, according to the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, some of the most dangerous organizations inside of the borders of this United States of America. That's true. And they pointed out, as Jane Madner talked about earlier in the news break, a brief, how many of them are in elected positions in our state and across this nation. People who are in elected positions, but members of the Proud Boys. People who are in elected positions that are members of the Boogaloo Boys. People who are in elected positions and are members of the Oath Keepers. And they actually have them, if you look at today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, the names of them. Many first respondents, many military people who are members of the military, also cross members of the Oath Keepers. Don't you understand the inherent dangers in that? And then after what we saw on January 6th, and for people to say not to worry, there's all the reason in the world to be worried. And so we have a government that has this information, is aware of it, is aware of the dangers. For those of you who think that's not a big deal, I say to you, you know, maybe read the definitions of what the organization stands for. Because the people who got outed are now saying, well, they took advantage of us. We never knew what their real rationale was for forming these groups. We never knew that their goal was to overthrow the government. Oh, you didn't, did you? So you put your hand up and swore an oath to an organization that you didn't know anything about, right? I mean, when you put your hand up and swear an oath to protect and serve in the military, you already know what that is. When you put your hand up and swear an oath, I don't know, maybe you have, Connor, maybe you did. I never was a member of the Boy Scouts, but don't you have to swear an oath? Don't you have to put your hand up and to join the Boy Scouts?
Yeah, you do.
Okay.
Yeah, so, if you're a member of Boy Scouts. I was never, my friends were, so.
Yeah, so when you put your hand up and swear an oath to protect and serve in law enforcement, you already know what those things are. Do you think these people didn't know, man, what they were swearing an oath to?
I think it's like it's a case-by-case basis with police officers, honestly. I mean, I think you can swear on... I mean, you have politicians that...
No, I'm talking about the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys and the Boogaloo Boys. They when you go and swear an oath to those things, or you go and swear an oath to anything, you don't do that without doing some research, right?
Yeah, you should. Like, in a perfect world, people would. But, you know, like I was about to say, like, we have politicians that before meeting with Congress that swear on the Bible or swear on any book they choose. And they still, you know, lie and they still have an agenda. So it's really just about whatever the person's intent is and how they're going to twist, you know, the facts and twist to fit, to suit exactly what their intended agenda is.
Well,
that's the most important thing.
Well, you know, I didn't swear an oath to be a radio talk show host.
Yeah.
but I guarantee you, if I'm going to swear an oath to anything, I'm going to know what it is I'm swearing an oath to.
Yeah.
Unless I'm kind of, you know, off my rocker.
Unless you're power hungry.
Well,
unless you have the chance to obtain money from lobbyists and influence the lives of many people.
Well, yeah, but you've got, again... They've got politicians who are in these organizations.
Yeah.
And you can't be both.
Exactly. Okay? You can.
There's a contradiction.
You shouldn't at all.
Yeah, there's a contradiction with you being in law enforcement and being a member of the Proud Boys or the Oath Keepers.
Mm-hmm.
An organization or a group that has made threats to overturn the government. How can you be a law enforcement officer? How can you be a military person and be an oath keeper too? You know, and so I would say that since they know who some of these people are, they need to bring pressure and force them to either do one or the other. You shouldn't be able to do both.
I mean, that should be a marker to become a police officer, not to be associated with any extremist groups. I mean, at any other, if we're even not even talking about police officers, just talking about any other place of work, like they do background checks, and if you're associated with any criminal or extremist history, you're not able to do that. And when it comes to policing, that's like the most important field for protecting the safety of all of our citizens, and hate crimes have been on the increase over the past 20 years. So I just don't understand why that's not part of the vetting process. Like, so you can't be a part of these groups whatsoever.
So I was talking with a friend earlier, and he said that there are people who join the military. They're already members of these other organizations to get the paramilitary training. And so, you know, that once they become a member of they're a member of these other groups before they join the military. And clearly the training you're going to get with the military is superior to any paramilitary training group. So I can kind of see where it would make sense for those people to then go and get the best training in the world when it comes to, you know, killing, which is what the military of the United States is. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. For me to come through, come through, come through. Welcome back to the last few minutes of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at the same number. I wanted to talk these last few minutes about the war on drugs that was ushered in under then President Richard Nixon. The United States has led the war on drugs abroad for decades, and it's been a staggering failure. So, listen to this. Colombia, you know, the number one producer of cocaine and one of the nations that, you know, the coca plant. And I know during the, might have been, I don't know, man, no, I forget the years. Maybe it was before the 90s, or it certainly wasn't during that time, because that was a big time of cocaine use in our country. But anyway, Colombia, one of the world's top producers of cocaine, has long been a key partner in Washington's failed war on drugs. But Gustavo Petro, the newly sworn-in Colombian president, has made good on a campaign pledge to take his country in a different direction. Last month, he said he would end forced eradication of coca, the coca plant, and support legislation to decriminalize and regulate cocaine sales in an effort to undercut illicit markets and the profit motive that drives them. Here at home, the Biden administration has also signaled an important shift. In April, Dr. Rao Gupta, the director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, introduced a new strategy that directs federal resources to harm reduction services. The aim is to prevent deaths from opioid overdose by increasing access to medical treatment, addiction recovery programs, and promoting alternatives to incarceration for minor drug-related offenses. The new strategy recognizes that the way we have approached the drug problem here at home hasn't worked. But the U.S.-led international drug control efforts have also been a staggering failure, contributing to violence, degradation, and displacement in places like Colombia, which largely export cocaine. It has also fueled the move towards synthetic opioids like fentanyl, driving overdose deaths here at home. I say to you, I ask you, what your thoughts are. So, cocaine, which used to come into this country, and people who chose to use it, certainly is addictive and caused a lot of people during my youth to become addicted to it And certainly it was the drug of choice for the young, for the upwardly mobile. Powdered cocaine was an accepted reality in the 80s, in the 90s. I know I was a partaker in it. It was fun. We had a lot of fun with it as you know, disco came into play and everybody was using cocaine. Athletes, you know, entertainers, politicians, doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs, teachers. It was what everybody was doing. Well, I can't say everybody 100%, but y'all know what I'm talking about. And so we began to poison those fields and those plants. And people found another way to get high. They replaced the cocaine because we were poisoning the plants overseas. Fentanyl use replaced cocaine. Look, the what we've done in this country with trying to eradicate people from getting high, it's why the prisons are filled to the rafters. It's why there have been so many people killed in drug deals that have gone bad. You know, in under the guise of trying to do something, trying to do something to protect the American citizens, the war on drugs has done the exact opposite. It's been one of the worst things that has ever been done. It is about time that somebody had enough sense to say, let's call it off. It's been an epic failure. And use the money in the proper vein. If people are addicted to things, let's do what we can to help them overcome their addictions. Let's not lock them up from being addicted. If people become alcoholic and they have a problem dealing with alcohol, instead of kicking them to the curb, let's find a way to help them recover. If people are addicted to cigarettes, okay, let's find a way to help them. But clearly this whole war on drugs has been an abject failure. And I think next week I'm going to spend even more time to really bring somebody in, and we're going to drill down on just what happened in this nation with its war on drugs. It has to be exposed because there are many people who have loved ones who didn't make it through those times because of decisions that were made politically. But anyway, we got to go. We got to get out of here. Thank everybody who made the show go. Thank you, Pastor Lewis from Souls to the Polls. Thank you, my good friend Robert Miranda from FLAC. And thank you, Connor. I'll be back on tomorrow. Thank you for listening. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you all later.
Like a mat, float like a butterfly on every single track. And the only language that I speak, girl, is back. So once I give this game to you, I can't take it back. Hollering at you from a 1977 Monte Carlo. Hard act to follow. It's showtime, trying to boo you up like it's the Apollo. Your walk is vicious. Let's get down to business. You and me together. Woo, that's